Welcome to the Living with Fire podcast, where we share stories and resources to help you live more safely with wildfire. Hi, I'm your host, Megan Kay. I'm the Outreach Coordinator for the Living with Fire program, and I'm joined by my boss, Jamie Rice Gomes. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Megan.
So we are here to talk about the podcast that you're about to listen to, which is about cutting your own Christmas tree on BLM land in Carson City. So we talked with, or not Carson City, sorry, the Carson Range District, which we kind of talk about. You'll hear in the podcast how far that reaches. But our guest was, we got to talk with Jen Diamond, who's a mitigation expert at BLM. And we were also joined by Tessa Putz, who works for Living with Fire as a natural resource associate. And so they kind of talk about the ecology and everything you need to know about cutting your Christmas tree. Does that make sense? What am I missing, Jamie?
No, that makes sense. I think it's typically we've only talked about cutting down Christmas trees in the U.S. Forest Service Humboldt-Toyabe area. But I really like how we have broadened our information range and we've we are now talking about cutting down the different trees in the Bureau of Land Management and land. And so I think it was a really great informational and interesting podcast for folks.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tessa Putz. I'm a natural resources associate with the Living with Fire program. And my work mainly focuses on the science communication side. So I do a lot of work translating and distilling current science into educational resources like fact sheets or guides or websites. And so a big part of what I'm working on right now is the Pinyon Juniper Encroachment Education Program. So I've learned a lot about that and have a lot to, talk about.
Awesome. Thank you. And that ties in a lot to what we're talking about today. And then, so Jen, do you mind introducing us and letting us know what you do, your job title, and then if you don't mind going into a little bit of kind of your history and how you got to your position.
Okay. So yeah, thanks for having me today. My name is Jennifer Diamond, and I work for the Bureau of Land Management as a fire prevention, education, mitigation specialist. So pretty long title. It's because we kind of cover a lot of different things. So I go around and try to educate the public on how they can help with fire prevention. So I go to schools and events and do social media to get the word out on what our causes are and how we can help prevent them. And so I also investigate fires so that I can determine what the cause is, so we know where to focus our efforts. I also am a public information officer, so that just kind of all goes hand in hand with trying to relay the message out to the public, and just a really big advocate for mitigation work and what we are doing out there on BLM administered lands. And kind of how I got into this position is I have 18 years with the Forest Service, as I just recently left that position as a fire prevention officer, which is very similar to the position that I'm doing right now. And prior to that, I have worked on engines and hand crews and did some time with the fire use module. So I did some suppression work for about 9 years before I got into prevention.
I've really enjoyed working with you, by the way, since I've been here.
Ah, thank you. I really enjoy working with all of you at Living with Fire.
Oh, thank you. So we're here today to kind of pick your brain about the Christmas tree cutting program. So for people who aren't aware, this program exists on public lands, so BLM and Forest Service lands. And it's a program where people can buy permits and go cut their own Christmas tree. And at least that's what I know about it. But I wanted to ask you, the expert, could you kind of just explain what the program is?
Yeah. So just kind of like you said, by obtaining a permit, that program allows the purchaser to cut trees on Bureau of Land Management administered lands. The permits are specifically for pinyon pine and junipers. That's the only tree species that is allowed to be harvested with this kind of permit on BLM lands. So the Christmas tree cutting program is also used to thin the rangelands in those dense areas. Those unhealthy stands of trees, we can get in there and just kind of thin it out by allowing the rangeland users to get in there and take a tree. It also better assists firefighters with reaching fire containment, the less vegetation that we have out there that are all encroaching upon each other. It ultimately helps slow the fire spread, and it also opens up areas for wildlife to forage. So there's a multi-purpose here where we are allowing people to have that adventure of getting their Christmas tree and also reducing the fuels out there for firefighters and for the public to ultimately be more safe and hoping to slow the fire spread.
Just out of curiosity, do you know how many people participate and cut trees down? Maybe from your experience with the Forest Service as well?
I want to say on Carson City District, I heard somewhere around 1,600 permits are generally issued for BLM Carson City District. I can't really put a number or speak to the other areas.
That's a lot of trees. That's a lot of thinning that could possibly be done.
Yeah, it is.
And Jen, when you say the Carson City District, do you, that's where you work, right?
It is. I wasn't specific to that in the beginning, wasn't I?
That's okay. Would you mind telling folks where the Carson City District is?
Yeah, so the Carson City District runs all up and down the Sierra Front and all the way east towards Austin almost. So it covers a really large area.
. 84% of wildfires nationwide are caused by people. If you're planning on heading out and enjoying public lands, visit nevadafireinfo.org and learn how you can recreate responsibly and do your part to prevent wildfires. So my next question for you would be, and you definitely covered this, but if you have anything to add, go for it. But it was just, how does tree cutting impact the rangeland ecosystems, and just kind of explain why it's good for the ecosystem to do to cut your own Christmas tree and to go in there. I think it's great that it makes sense to me that it for wildfire risk mitigation, reducing the risk and going in there and getting rid of those hazardous fuels. But as far as, you know, myself, I'm kind of a layman when it comes to ecology. I'm learning. could you drop some knowledge about just the effect that it has on the ecosystem?
Yeah, so I guess I like to look at it as it's a part of active forest management. And that overall is good for the ecosystems. It's an important part of, like you said, reducing the risk of fire in the forest or rangelands, and to make the rangelands healthier overall. And so by allowing like a small harvest of trees over an area can improve the rangelands by doing that thinning like we were talking about. And we do a similar thing on a much larger scale with our fuels program. So we have projects all over the state working to reduce fuels. And so I kind of look at it from a fire prevention mitigation standpoint as that's what this program is doing on a little bit of a smaller scale there. So when you talk about, you know, it being healthy, all of those trees out there are ultimately competing with one another. So many of them will ultimately die from kind of fighting each other for the same sunlight and water. So by thinning them, the ones that we leave behind are going to be much healthier than if we left them crowded and fighting for survival. So when you do go out there and pick a tree, it's best to pick one from an area that is overstocked and really dense, just a thicket area. If you can find a nice one in there, that's the best to do so that we're reaching that goal of creating some spacing between the trees.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I feel like when people are going out to cut their Christmas trees, they're probably not thinking about that. They're just thinking about, you know, what's the prettiest tree that they want to take home. So I also wanted to kind of pivot and ask Tessa some questions about pinyon and juniper encroachment on the rangelands, because that's your specialty.
I'd love to speak to that a little bit. Jen brings up some really great points about, you know, managing the landscape. And in either case, you know, we need to manage both landscapes, both ecosystems for resilience. And so, you know, we have pinyon juniper woodland expanding into these sagebrush rangelands, and they're out competing the shrubs and the grasses and forbs for the, you know, the resources that Jen talked about, the, you know, water and sunlight and nutrients. You know, trees have these wide reaching, far reaching roots, and they can acquire a lot of these resources much more easily than the shrubs and herbaceous plants do. So our sagebrush seas are really threatened by encroachment, and but they, you know, they have their own value. They support you know, a lot of ecosystem services like carbon sequestration and soil stability, and they also provide you know, a lot of habitat for wildlife. We all know, a lot of us probably know about the sage grouse, but there's many other species that are specifically dependent upon. And then also like the game that use it as well. They'll use the woodland and they'll use the sagebrush ecosystems as well. And so, yeah, it's important, but to, you know, to improve the resilience of the sagebrush, but then also the woodland as well. You know, with infilling, we've had, you know, these forests become a lot more dense. And yeah, we need to, you know, in these, under these, you know, more stressful conditions that we're seeing, we need to reduce the number of trees, which, you know, by cutting, having people come in and cut, that's a great way to do that.
Yeah. I was always, this just as an anecdote, when I was getting out, you know, first sort of discovering Nevada as an adult and like going out into the country, in the backcountry, I didn't really understand the term rangeland, because to me it just seemed like a forest. And then now that I'm getting, I understand like the background in the ecology a little bit, and the encroachment of these pinyon trees and junipers, it's like, okay, so it wasn't meant to be like dense stands of pinyon and juniper, not necessarily. So it's been interesting it's like a shift, because it's what I was used to growing up. You know, it's like I'm used to this as just the landscape. And then when you think about it in terms of like, these are actually encroaching and sucking up all the water out of the soil. And it's really kind of a paradigm shift in like the way I look at Nevada and the landscape. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys for giving the background on that ecology. I think that we did talk a lot about what thinning and cutting these trees does for hazardous wildland fuel mitigation. And to kind of unpack that term, meaning that buildup of all these hazardous fuels creates potential fuel for wildfire. I said that really poorly. So maybe Jen, you could unpack that term for everybody. Just the term of just hazardous wildland fuels. And then also if you wanted to add anything more to how cutting your Christmas tree helps with that effort.
Okay. Yeah. So when we talk about hazardous fuels and reducing fuels and these projects that we're doing, the objective there is to remove enough vegetation so that when a wildfire does burn in that area, it's less severe and can be more easily managed. So when that vegetation accumulates, it allows fires to burn much hotter, much faster. The flame lengths are higher. The embers get thrown into the next stand of vegetation. So by clearing out some of those small trees out of those dense areas, it's just helping and reducing those odds of those embers carrying it into the next stand of vegetation. So that's kind of what we mean when we talk about reducing fuels and having that spacing in between each other. And so, like I mentioned earlier, we have a fuels program that works on reducing that excess vegetation. And they work through various projects such as mastication, chipping, building hand piles to burn, doing broadcast prescribed burns, having firewood cutting permit program, and also by harvesting small trees, such as this Christmas tree program. So that's kind of multiple ways that we do reduction fuels work. And so for those families that are chopping down their own trees, they're contributing to doing that part in thinning out the rangelands in the forest. So we're kind of killing two birds with one stone there, if you want to say that.
I love that idea. And I feel like people would love that as well. I am inspired to do it. And I've never done it before. So I want to move on to talking about sort of the ins and outs of cutting your own Christmas tree. But before I do, I wanted to give you guys, Jamie and Tessa, a chance to add anything else about just sort of the fuels or the ecology portion of it, if you have anything else.
Yeah, I think one thing that is really interesting to think about is that at least on the encroachment side, that as woodland expands, the fire regime really changes. So with encroaching trees, both the fuel structure and the amount changes. And so more trees obviously leads to more fuel and more litter and more downed wood. But there's this change from more patchy surface fire that's not as continuous, like within the shrubs, to with trees, fire that's in the canopy, and this connection from surface fires to canopy fires that are often need more extreme fire weather conditions to occur. And then when they do occur, there's more connectivity. And so, if we can, reduce the fuel loads, like the many ways that Jen talked about, reduce encroachment, that all of that is really important to do so that we decrease high severity wildfires, or at least the potential for them.
Communities located in wildfire-prone areas need to take extra measures to live safely. There are many ways to prepare communities and properties for wildfire, including creating and maintaining adequate defensible space and hardening homes to withstand wildfire. This could mean altering or replacing certain components of the home. Our Wildfire Home Retrofit Guide will help you better prepare your home and communities for wildfire. You can find the guide in the resources section of our website at livingwithfire.com.
I think maybe we should clarify, some terms that folks might not know, like what's a canopy, what's herbaceous, what's mastication. Maybe we can give like a little couple sentence, explanation what those things are.
Yeah. So Jen, do you mind talking about mastication since you brought it up?
Sure. Mastication is a way that we can reduce the fuels by using mechanical equipment. So for instance, we might bring in, I am forgetting the name of the actual piece of equipment that can basically munch down all of the vegetation down to the surface.
It just called a masticator?
Oh yeah, you're right. It is. There's another piece of equipment that I'm thinking of besides that.
And it has like the mini blades on it, basically, right? And
then
it kind of like mows through and chops it up and crunches it over. Yeah.
It does. And so it just kind of eats it up. It makes it real small and takes it down to the surface level.
Yeah. Which is something that people don't think of, like that sort of mechanical treatment for sure. And then herbaceous. Tessa, do you want to take that one?
I brought that up. So that just refers to the more leafy plants that are growing with the shrubs. So that's the grasses and the forbs, which are the, you know, some of more of the wildflowers that we see. And so those all grow in these sagebrush rangelands and are, you know, really important because they provide food and habitat for animals, for wildlife. And then I also mentioned canopy. So the canopy fires are basically in the tops of trees is where those occur.
Yeah, that makes sense. Good call, Jamie. Yeah, sometimes I get, I forget, you know, that these terms are sort of jargony. So listener, you're... I don't know if I'll include this little, my little speech here, but for the listeners out there, bear with us. Cool. So if there's anything else, I'll try to keep that in mind. So I might interrupt folks if those things do come up in the future. So the next thing I wanted to talk about are just sort of the ins and outs of cutting your own Christmas tree, for folks who maybe have never done it before. And so those might include how to get your permits or what are the rules and the etiquette, and then just kind of things that you need. And I, just from talking with you, Jen, I feel like you're the expert, not just because it's your job, but because you have experience cutting the trees. So I was wondering, I'm just going to defer to you. Tell us what to do when we're going to cut our own Christmas tree.
So first you're going to want to find out, I guess, how to get a permit. So you can go to forestproducts.blm.gov and search for Nevada and then the district that you choose to obtain a permit from. So first you get that permit, and then you're going to want to, well, first of all, know that you can only get pinyon, pine, and junipers. And then, you know, pick an area that you want to go travel in. And then know what the weather forecast is like, because, you know, it's always a good idea when heading into the woods at any time of the year, but especially in winter time, to just know what that weather is going to be like. I know that I've ran into that a couple of times, just trying to beat a storm and trying to time it right so that I know that the roads are safe to travel on and I'm not going to be cutting a tree in a blizzard with a bunch of wind. So know the weather. And I always pack, you know, I mean, like you're going to be out in the cold. So a hat, a jacket, gloves, typical winter clothing. I also bring, of course, it's going to be probably a pretty long day, so I bring food and I bring water. Anytime you're operating some kind of saw or equipment, it's a good idea to have a first aid kit. And then once you cut your tree, you're going to need something to bring it home with and to secure it. So bring some type of heavy rope or tie downs to secure it in your vehicle. Also, when traveling on dirt roads in the wintertime, just I always like to bring a shovel or even chains if you're going to need chains on your vehicle. Just in case that the weather isn't exactly how you planned. But I try to kind of go around that storm if there is one.
Yeah. Don't even risk it.
Right. Just kind of know that some of those areas that you're used to seeing might be inaccessible, by the time you choose to get out there. So it looks a little different after there's snow on the ground. And then just once you're out there and you do actually cut the tree that you choose, the stumps cannot be any higher than 6 inches from the ground. And they should be cut level. So a lot of people like to maybe put a slash cut in it so that it's diagonal so that they can kind of push it over. And that's nice to get the tree on the ground. But after you do that, go back and cut it as close to the ground and as level and parallel to the ground that you can. And that's to avoid tripping hazards for the next person that's walking around out there. Just not nice to see something sharp sticking out of the ground like that.
Yeah. And especially if it's not then sort of blunt cut and it's just at a angle, that's just like a spike sticking out of the ground.
Yeah.
So yeah. Not safe for the next person.
Yeah. And then I always kind of look in the tree to make sure that there's not a nest or any little critters living in there.
Yeah.
You don't want to take a home from something. And then once you do cut the tree, and maybe there's some limbs or green branches that you don't want, on the bottom to stick it into your Christmas tree stand. Just make sure that you scatter those limbs around. Don't just pile them all in one area. It just kind of looks more natural if they're scattered out there.
Cool. Have you guys, Jamie and Tessa, have you guys ever cut your own Christmas tree?
No, but I can't wait to.
Yeah, I have. But I've never cut it on BLM lands before. I typically have gotten a U.S. Forest Service permit because I want to get a fir to cut.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
I like pines. My family always got pines. So it's like, it kind of makes sense that it's, I guess it's your taste, you know? Do you guys have any, do you have any tips then, Jamie? Anything that came up from your experience that you think might be helpful for someone who's maybe trying it for the first time?
It's, you're probably going to be going, off-roading and bring chains. If you have a truck, it's obviously easier than like a small SUV. I have a small SUV and I really want a truck because I really hate putting my Christmas tree on top of my small SUV, but it happens, that's what we have. That's the tool we have. So, I just ensure to have, tie downs and bring boots and a coat. It's always colder than you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
And if you do have to stick it inside your vehicle, it's, pretty handy to have a sheet or a tarp or something to lay it on to kind of help with the
sap,
the needles being in the sap and just the mess that's left behind, and to like yank it out of there.
Yeah, I was about to say it's like a little bit of a tool to help you get it out of there.
Yeah. And then Jamie mentioned roads, and I just wanted to kind of highlight using the existing roads and well-traveled roads. Not to create your own or to drive on one that maybe somebody else has created and it looks like a road. because that just causes resource damage. And so just, you know, take a map or don't rely on GPS systems, but having them is handy to just help you out with what are those maintained roads and what are the more well-traveled roads.
Jen, what like what time period does this Christmas tree permit program run?
Yeah, so it is open now until December 24th.
In case you want to get that last minute Christmas tree.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Like, you can think of many circumstances that might happen, you know?
Yeah. And also know that when you are out there and you do get your permit, there is a stipulation page and a permit that must be in the permittee's possession while gathering and transporting the tree. So make sure that you attach that, like, I think it's an adhesive permit to the tree so it can be seen by a person from outside of the vehicle.
Great tip. Yeah. Awesome. So I feel like if, you know, I have all the knowledge I need now to go cut my Christmas tree for the first time. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your knowledge. Thank you, Tessa, for joining us. And Jamie, as always, you're all, like, always have the best questions, the things that I don't think of.
I have a couple more things that I just thought of. The cost is
$5.
$5
for a Christmas tree.
Not bad. And then if you do choose to use a power saw, make sure that you have a working spark arrestor. It's required to have one. And then just make sure that you, if you have any garbage out there, and bring a garbage bag with you so that you're not leaving behind any litter. It must all be removed.
Yeah. And yeah, the spark arrestor, it just makes me think of what we kind of talked about off mic earlier about how it's still dry out there. Like, we haven't had as much precipitation as I feel like people want. So, you know, keep in mind that the temperatures are still higher than normal and it is still dry, and there is still potential for sparking a wildfire when you go out into the rangelands.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, that's all I had. I'd like to thank you all for being here. And do you guys have anything else you'd like to add?
No. Well, if you do go out there and get a Christmas tree, you'll be sure to make a lot of memories, because I know every single time I've gone, it's a story to tell, and it's quite an adventure. So bring a good attitude. You never know what's going to happen.
Thank you for listening to the Living with Fire podcast. You can find more stories about wildfire and other resources at livingwithfire.com. The Living with Fire program is funded by the University of Nevada, Reno Extension, Nevada Division of Forestry, Bureau of Land Management, and the United States Forest Service.